I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. This week marks 1 year since the international community began the long-awaited fight back against Washington hegemony as most of the world refused to sanction Russia when its forces moved into Donbass, Ukraine, to protect its population 8 years after a US-backed coup that saw thousands killed. Within months of the EU and UK responding by backing US sanctions on vital Russian energy, Joe Biden, Antony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, Victoria Nuland, and the Norwegian government conspired to blow up multi-billion dollar energy pipelines supplying Germany. As well as September 2022 being an ecological catastrophe, it resulted in a complete destabilization of energy prices that some blame for killing hundreds of thousands as the poor and vulnerable died of cold. At least that's according to the global exclusive scoop of the century made by one of the greatest journalists in history, Seymour Hersh, famous for exposing the My Lai massacre that became emblematic of US slaughter of millions in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, to the NATO nation use of torture in Iraq. The former New York Times journalist and author of Reporter, a memoir, joins me from his home in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Sy, for coming back on. I should say that just in the past few days, you've come out with another piece with the arguably horrific title, From the Gulf of Tonkin to the Baltic Sea, almost running parallels with respect to the Norwegian government between wars that killed millions of people in Vietnam, Cambodia and Laos, too, comparing them to the Biden attack that some say may have killed hundreds of thousands this winter. Are they really comparable?
Well, I did write that. I didn't say they were comparable. I just mentioned that there's it's a historical fact that the United States manipulated intelligence and invented an attack that didn't exist in 1964 to drive the Congress to give the president what he wanted, authority to do everything. And it's also pretty true right now that this presidency, it's been caught out in a way by the fact that they did the pipeline. They're not admitting it, and I don't think they ever will, because the implications of doing so. I must note that I have no idea if anybody died because of the cold. I think the real worry Europe has is next winter, because between the time of the pipeline was blown up, September, late September, and the onset of winter, they managed to increase the number of amount of fuel they had stored. But the worry is next winter, and as I'm sure people in Europe know or pay more attention to than here, there's been a lot of storm and drag, a lot of stuff going on in Germany about this. There have been debates in the Bundestag, their parliament, and a lot of discussions. I know I've been invited to all sorts of meetings there, which I'm not doing. And I know the UN Security Council had a debate on this, none of which gets much coverage in the American press, which is too bad.
Let's just go to that UN Security Council meeting. I know that two of the people that testified there, they've both been on the show, Ray McGovern and Jeffrey Sachs. I don't know what you thought, if you heard. The Undersecretary General appointed by Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, Rosemary DiCarlo, appointed by this Antonio Guterres, said the UN is in no position to investigate. This is because there are doubts over the investigations currently being conducted by the Swedish, Danish and German governments into the Nord Stream catastrophe. And she said, she also said, it was unleashed by the invasion of Ukraine and we should avoid any unfounded accusations, as if kind of backing up some of the Security Council permanent members. I don't know what you thought of Britain's envoy. Single source journalism debunked. I mean, I don't know what you thought of that.
Well, let me tell you something. I didn't follow it that closely. I read an article about it today, and I did hear about what the Britain diplomat said. In America, the president has something called an immense power on the intelligence community. He can give what they call a tasking order to the community. He can say to the intelligence office, we have something called the ONI, Office of National Intelligence, which is with the supreme commander of all intelligence assets, including the military. And they have an intelligence office. He could ask them for a complete all source to get access to signals, intelligence, et cetera. He could also ask the CIA directly, because they have an intelligence division that does its own work. And there's also a special little black intelligence operation for the covert forces we have. There's three large intelligence organizations that have the capacity to get access to all. and he has not issued one order. He's not asked for any evaluations. Jake Sullivan, the guy who had a lot to do with organizing the initial operation, he was the national security advisor. He had a news conference in which he said, well, we're having our allies look at it. And he mentioned that he didn't talk about his own American investigation. The Swedes and the Danes did do an investigation in September and October. They came out with this astonishing conclusion that indeed something happened under the water, and it was an explosion.
I'm just thinking that something different. I want to get onto the failure of Russian intelligence, actually, that your report arguably exposes as well. But there's something different here, because whilst they can deny it and lie, as they have done from stories from you, from Watergate to My Lai to everything else, this time it's the New York Times saying good reasons to doubt the story. The White House saying should not be believed on any fact. And as for Ned Price, while he may be allowed judicially to be able to lie, he says beyond getting his facts entirely wrong, as he has before in very high-profile ways. What's all the character assassination bundled in with the denials that they're allowed to do if this was a covert atrocity that the Biden administration undertook?
No, that's the game. I live with that. That's the game. I always had people that I could talk to since doing the My Lai story in 1969. It was a massacre that had been done a year and a half earlier, about which I will tell you the knowledge of that kind of stuff was known to many in the press corps. But if you're working over there, I can understand that. Over there would be dangerous to do a story like that. You know, the Americans would not like it. So there was always a hesitation inevitably about that. But when I did that story, more than half the country thought I was lying about it. You know, so I've gone through this, even on a mass murder story, which is so obvious to find.
But it's quicker nowadays, because your article about Nord Stream is much quicker than Bob Scheer's article about Gulf of Tonkin false flags committed by Johnson.
Yeah,
things are getting quicker.
It's goddamn, you know, communication stuff that's going on that I don't know much about. I mean, I can operate a cell phone maybe on my good day. You know, in our generation there was phones. You know, and now it's so fast. Everything's so quick, so fast, so quick. Since I did that first story a month ago, was it a month ago? 3 weeks ago. I'm beginning 350 to 400 phone emails a day. Because everybody knows my email is out there. It's like a phone number. And so, and in the old days, it took a week before, you know, I got much response. I'd had to see, I wrote my first My Lai stories and it was sent to 50 papers. And in one afternoon by Telex Collect, this was in 1969. And we didn't know till the next day, I and my colleague at the little news agency on which I published, nobody wanted my story. Nobody in the world wanted the My Lai story, I'll tell you that. And we didn't know until the next afternoon when the out-of-town papers came in that it had been a splash. Now it's so different, and it's probably better, but it makes for, it's real easy. Look, this White House has not only no incentive to investigate the story, they have no incentive to ever deny it. I mean, look what they did in late September of last year, what, you know, how many, 5 months ago. They could have blown it up any time from, you know, I wrote about operations in Norway and all that, those earlier stories. I wrote about a lot of detail about it, an awful lot of detail, including stuff inside some of the White House meetings. So, and I didn't, of course, I didn't name my source. And if you notice, if you read it carefully, there's no suggestion my source was ever at any meetings. Because the one thing we're good at is tracking people. If I had somebody at a meeting, they would know who was there and they would work from that. At this point, you know, their problem is, you know, get an illegal wiretap, which I don't think they'll do.
Well, and Snowden, who said the Chinese balloon story was, he added to your original surveillance stories of the 70s, saying it is already bugged. Maybe they're bugging this right now. But I just want to quickly get to Russia, because as you know, and you must have seen, the Russian Defense Ministry, Sergei Shoigu's organization in Moscow, said Oh, it's MI6 and something to do with the Royal Navy. And then there was this leaked message from the then British, very brief British Prime Minister, a Freedom of Information request of why she was texting Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State. It's done. This is Liz Truss. And Freedom of Information request elicited a response. Thank you for your email. Searches have not identified any information held in scope of your request. But it was leaked that she'd texted this. Russia didn't really understand. I mean, they knew about Salvador Allende, which you exposed the CIA plot against back in the 70s. In this case, Russia completely missed the boat when it came to Nord Stream?
I have no idea. I mean, no, I have not talked to anybody in Russia. And Russia, of course, is responding to the story with enthusiasm because, you know, they're in a war. And all bets are off. But I seriously doubt. Well, let me see. Let me put it this way. I've said this a couple of times in interviews. If I were a reporter looking at this story now at the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, I would try and find people, even Americans, who own or on the boards of companies that build pipelines underwater. Because I can tell you right now, I have empirical stuff I can't make public because I've said I would not. But I can tell you right now that there's nobody in the pipeline business, nobody who was a consultant to the companies that worked for the pipelines, and I've talked to those people, somehow, at least one in particular, nobody has they're absolutely, the one thing they're convinced of course, is Russia did do it, because it's absolutely insane for them to have done it. By the time it happened in September, the Germans, the second pipeline, Nord Stream 2, was online. The first pipeline was announced under the Bush-Cheney years. And I can tell you that going back to the Kennedy years, we've always, the worry has been that Russia, because of its enormous amount of natural gas and oil in all of Russia, Asia, is full of raw minerals and gas, methane gas. There's always been a worry that Russia would, the word we use is weaponize gas, particularly as a weapon, political weapon, in the struggle with us that's been going on since World War II.
Sy Hersh, I'll stop you there. More from the Pulitzer Prize-winning legendary journalist after this break.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Pulitzer Prize-winning legendary journalist Seymour Hersh. You mentioned the Cheney years. One of the Cheney alumnus is Victoria Nuland, of course. And I know Cheney and you go back years in some ways to the 1970s. When did this all start then? Because if they were planning it way before the one year ago when Russia moved into Donbass for the big fight back, Minsk, we had a UN Security Council resolution. This would completely violate that resolution 2202 to try and calm things down when it came to the Ukraine versus Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine situation. We had Nuland and the phone call saying, "F*** the EU in 2014. Of course, all the media, you mentioned the New York Times and Washington Post, said it, the whole war started a year ago. When did it start, and why would the Biden, and Joe Biden personally, you're talking about, and Jake Sullivan and Antony Blinken, they knew that, they knew Minsk was in force, and they just went, go for it, blow the thing up.
Well, Minsk, I think the record of Minsk is pretty horrible. I mean, if you know Chancellor, former Chancellor Merkel said, literally in the words I'm giving you, the West signed the Minsk Accords in 2014, which called for a peace, ceasefire in the areas of Ukraine that have a lot of Russian population. And she said everybody knew it just gave NATO a chance to build up arms.
Some people might say that given the scope of the article in terms of who must have had to know about this plan, whether it be the Norwegian sailors and governments, and you're an expert at this naval stuff since Project Jennifer. People can look it up, and sounds crazy, multi-billion-dollar ideas of Russian nuclear submarines. Norwegian sailors, people in the Norwegian departments, people in the State Department, people in the Pentagon, people in the CIA, Bill Burns's lot, and there's only one whistleblower in effect here. Who is saying, look, this is pretty bad what the Biden administration has done. That, I suppose, that surprised even some, maybe in those institutions who, you know, respect you greatly, but at the same time have to go along with their leaders, whether it be in state or the CIA.
You know, you mentioned Ed Snowden. Here's what interests me about him. At the time he was in the CIA, I read his memoir, which is quite interesting because he was really a kid really into computers and not into political science. So he's in there and he discovers that the one thing about the NSA that I knew from, I've been reporting in Washington for the New York Times and before that for the AP, I covered the war, Vietnam War, in Washington, in the Pentagon. And so I got to know some people who worked in the signals world. And the one thing that I understood is that if you're in the signals world, you cannot intercept an American without a warrant. What Snowden discovered, was told and learned as a consultant, was that they had changed the law. They opened it up, and everybody knew it. They opened it up so they could now listen. If you were listening to somebody who thought was an agent of Al-Qaeda and he had a conversation with an American, you didn't have to hesitate. Take it, copy it down. So Snowden, who was not a political person, a technological person, recoiled at this. And at that time, there were maybe 25,000 people working for the NSA. Let's just say, I know it's more than that, probably 10% directly knew the rules had changed. It's a very important rule. Rules is always you do not listen to Americans as a constitution. And out of that, out of those 8,000, many thousands, one spoke out about a direct violation of one of the most sensitive things in the American Constitution, the right of speech not to be monitored without a warrant. And so people sometimes talk to me about, well, you know, you're a conspiracy theorist because, you know, one, the conspiracy, Snowden was one out of, what, 10, 15, 25,000? One to speak out. So there is something about the community that is bizarre. And Snowden, the guts it took him to speak out and the price he's paying for it, you know, he's losing, I don't think it's safe for him to ever come back to the country. But the bottom line is the notion that there's something conspiratorial for a reporter to, there's just all kinds of people in the American government and many in the intelligence community and many in the military undervalue the Constitution. They take an oath of office to the Constitution, not to the president. And those are the people I know many of them over the years. Those are the people, and some rise to seed ones, some become four stars. Some of the people I've talked to were leading way at the top of the climb, talked to me privately about stuff they couldn't stand, because for them, the Constitution was the thing. And those people are the people I know. And I will tell you right now, they're also the people I will protect forever, because, you know, why shouldn't I? And I'm telling you, what happened in Norway, the reason I wrote the piece of Substack, going back to Lyndon Johnson, we all know that Johnson's premise for expanding the war and getting congressional commitment to do whatever he wanted in the war, the same as the one that George Bush got after 9/11, that led him to go to Iraq. He could do what he wanted. He got a complete bill of goods right in a speech called the Tonkin Gulf Resolution in the Congress passed after Johnson lied about what happened in the war. He invented a North Vietnamese attack. He and McNamara conspired to change the intelligence. This is not new, it's been known. But I was thinking of that in the context of Johnson lied about something that led us into a war that killed 58,000 Americans, and get this, anywhere between 1 and 3 million Vietnamese. We don't know. That's the way we deal with these people of a different race, I guess, 1 to 3 million. And so here we have a president's lying about not telling truth about something he authorized that did happen. And what's going to happen now? Germany, I think the reason for it, I think in late September last year, it was clear that whatever we thought about Ukraine winning the war or standing up to the Russians was going to be very unlikely, which it is going to be very unlikely, despite what you read in the daily newspapers. It's not going well at all. So Putin's telling Western Europe and the Germans, particularly the Germans, that, well, we're so worried that you might decide not to support us all the way because you're getting oil from Russia. They control the pipeline, as I said, the Germans. He was worried they would drop the sanctions and start taking the gas again. So what he did is he said to Europe and Western, well, you can't in a crunch, you know, we're going to let you be cold. It's not cold this year, but I will tell you right now, the real worry is next winter.
Although the excess deaths, a BBC piece said it was the highest on record in 2022 towards, you know, since the Nord Stream destabilized prices. So there are varying degrees, and some people are saying they're not allowing the information out. But before, to get away from the depressing idea that there's only very few people that stand up for the Constitution amongst these thousands of people who work in your intelligence services, in a way, you're complimenting Joe Biden and Sullivan, Joe Biden, who everyone is saying, oh, he's senile and so on. There's an implication that the reason they gave away the fact they were pleased with the Nord Stream atrocity, Nuland, of course, saying it's a hunk of metal, and Blinken saying whatever he was saying, in a way may give them some judicial help in any future court that they're allowed to covertly blow up the Nord Stream. Is that right?
What?
In the sense that you say people were alarmed that they were publicly telling the press, hey, the Nord Stream has been destroyed. And on the other hand, there is a reason why they might wish it be known that the action had been taken.
Well, I'll tell you the point of view that I gathered from the team, the very, I think, very competent team, that American team that went to Norway. We went to Norway to figure out what to do because the pipelines were running all the way down the Baltic Sea from basically outside of St. Peter's, outside of Leningrad, in all the way down to Germany directly. There were 750 miles, two of them. And all I can tell you is the thought was that the people assigned to do this project is, this was in before Christmas of 2021 when Russia was building up, and it was clear that Putin was mentally across the line anyway. It was going to be hard to get him off it. Among other things, the rhetoric of the Biden, anti-Russian rhetoric, had improved. the Russia didn't need a war. Russia has been doing dealing with the West and trading and was profitable. And Moscow was a town of tourism in nice weather, great restaurants and all that stuff. People very open about America. And to get back into a war, the public didn't want. But our rhetoric after Biden got in office, the rhetoric, if you looked at statistically, the percentage of people who supported Putin and the idea of war, they went up enormously. And he got political backing in a way from the rhetoric to do the war because he's still staying reasonably popular in Russia. Nobody likes him. When I go to Russia, everybody privately would say, well, you know, he's a leader we don't like. But he's not being challenged for the leadership, even though we keep on wishing he would be. The people who did this thing were assigned to do it in the intelligence community, the operators. They initially thought it was a great idea. Let's get a capacity. It was before Russia was talking, but it was still late 2021. Let's go and find out if we can do it. And within a few months, the White House clearly was told, the people doing it thought this wasn't a bad idea, to give the White House some options to maybe bluff or convince Putin that the cost is going to be very high. But then when the White House, Biden talked publicly about this within 3 weeks of the briefing or the information he got, and Victoria Nuland both within a three-week period in late January and early February of last year, both said publicly, well, we know we can stop it, and he said at a news conference, if we will stop the Nord Stream 1, and the president was asked after he said that by a reporter, it's all on tape, it was on the nightly news, a reporter said, well, how will you do it? He said, let me tell you, we know how to do it, we can do it, language like that. And at that point, the guys in the group were upset because it was supposed to be a covert operation. And by the time they finally, they did their job, they made it possible, they planted the bombs with the aid of Navy divers, and then it just sat there. The bomb sat there for months. It was planted in June, when the war looked like the Ukrainians were doing okay, by late September, there was certainly evidence of a serious issue. It wasn't going to be a cakewalk for the Ukrainians, like some people in the press wrote. And at that point, the group that made it possible understood that he did it for political purposes, period. It's not going to help the war. And what it does, what he was doing it for, was to prevent Germany and Western Europe, in case the winter came quickly, from opening up the pipeline. The German government had done the sanction. They had stopped the pipeline, but the German government had the right to open up the new one. And that wasn't wanted by Biden. That's the rationale for the mission, to make sure that Europe and Western Europe keeps on funneling, supporting NATO, and keeps on funneling arms into what is clearly a proxy war against Russia that's being fought right now.
Just finally and very briefly, the silence of the green movement. This is supposed to be one of the largest, perhaps, man-made methane leak in history. The Biden administration is committed. I was speaking to you from a place hosting COP28. The Biden administration always talking about green issues, fossil fuel emissions. Where is Greta Thunberg? Where is Greenpeace that said they wanted to do an investigation? Have they contacted you?
A lot of people have, but I don't... The Greens have really moved a lot politically, and more than I thought. I really was ignorant about it. The Greens have moved center-right, which surprised me no end, because I knew them differently when I was dealing with Germany after 9/11. What is happening is both Macron in France and Scholz in the Chancellor of Germany have been talking more to the Chinese, which the Chinese have been. They may be awful on making vaccines and really dumb about how they ran that whole COVID business, but the Chinese have been way ahead of the rest of the world on what they call renewables, on the dealing and investing in non-oil-based, energy sources. And so it's gotten to the point where with the pipeline gone, BASF, which is the largest chemical company in the world and 100,000 employees, has had a cutback production because they can't get all the gas they want. And anyway, the price of the gas is so much higher, it cuts into the profit. They've actually had contacts with China, and so I understand, I've even had thought about maybe moving some of their physical plants or some of their products.
And that might be Russian gas coming down to China. Sorry, we're going to have to stop it there. Thank you so much, Seymour Hersh. And Sy's book, Reporter, A Memoir, is out now. That's it for the show. We'll be back next Saturday with a different perspective from George Friedman, the founder and former chairman of now-defunct intelligence gathering platform Stratfor, subject of revelations by WikiLeaks. Until then, you can keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you very soon.